Now, let's all wind down a little bit. So, okay, that was we've solved all the problems of the world. But probably for a lot of people, more important than all of that is that Peaky Blinders is back tonight at 9 p.m. and moved to BBC One now, and this is the fifth series. So Owen Murphy, entertainment editor of Extra.ie, is here, and he'll explain to us what it is. But it's a show that started out with a kind of a cult following, but really I think momentum has built and built and built, and it has had an influence across music, across fashion, across everything else. It really has become, I guess, one of the cultural touchstones of the day. So Owen, welcome. Are you a fan of Peaky Blinders?
Absolutely, and have been from day one.
Yeah, so is it come to this now? I knew about it before you said
it. It's the badge of honour. It's that kind of, I was at the first Electric Picnic when nobody was there, and you two in the Dandelion Market. But it was, and it was funny because it became popular nearly more so for the soundtrack than the writing and the programme and the initial takeoff, because it was on BBC Two, so it didn't have that kind of mainstream viewing. And
tell us what it is first for people who haven't seen it.
Okay, so it's kind of like Downton Abbey for criminals, and it's based on this criminal gang who are living in post World War One Birmingham, and their leader is played by Tommy Shelby, and he's played by Cillian Murphy, and he comes back from the war, and he's got post-traumatic stress disorder, and he is struggling to deal with day-to-day life. So to combat that, he throws himself into organized crime, and his family have been kind of running these loose criminal enterprises, sort of low-level racketeering and bookies, and he kind of takes them up to the next level, and they kind of get into gang turf wars, and they steal a load of guns from the British, and they basically use them to get influence, to get back, and to build their empire.
And it's set in Birmingham,
yes,
and very gritty, and like it has a lovely period feel, but a grittier period feel than your Downton, really.
It does. I mean, it's based in the slums of Birmingham, and I suppose what gives it this kind of wonderful appeal is the look of it is incredible, because you're opening the doors to these old slum period houses, and then suddenly you're meeting these immaculately turned out dapper gangsters who are smoking about 1,000 cigarettes a minute, and they're just... The language that has been written is fantastic. And I suppose Killian's accent, which has been getting a lot of traction this season, is brilliant. And you really are immersed from the start, and you're drawn into it, and you're sold. Even though, you know, it's not... While the figures in it are historical figures, it's completely fictitious.
Yeah. So, now, you mentioned Cillian Murphy, and his accent is extraordinary, but it's practically an Irish show in a lot of ways. A lot of Irish actors in it, and thematically, they are of Irish descent,
or
the central family and their acolytes, and it very much is Irishy, isn't it?
It is. Well, I mean, you've Cillian Murphy, you've got Paddy Lee is involved in it as well. You have Charlie McKenna's going into it, Brian Gleeson's going into it this season, and you have Charlie Murphy is playing Jesse Eden in it. So a lot of the mainstream cast are quite Irish. Historically, the Peaky Blinders gang were of Irish race. There was an Irish gypsy element to it, and they kind of, well, again, they were a different time period to the Peaky Blinders. And now the original Peaky Blinders gang, they were pre-World War One, and they kind of they'd gone and made their money and disappeared in the time period that we're dealing with now, whereas this is based kind of between the two wars.
Yeah, and we'll get over that.
Yeah.
That strong Irish kind of theme. And I guess so at the beginning, kind of a slow burner, and then was it like when it went on Netflix, essentially the first two seasons went on Netflix, and it's become a worldwide thing now, isn't
it? And so it came in 2013, Netflix took it in 2014, and there was that kind of brief period as you got to series three where people were really starting to talk about it, and they were starting to, and then the clothing started to kind of go almost mainstream, and you'd see a lot of people wandering around wearing tweed caps and really heavy overcoats and tweed waistcoats, and it looked like they were going to Mart's in the middle of summer. It really kind of hit home then that people had taken this on board. And I think Netflix dropped series four into 180 countries worldwide. So now Netflix don't release their figures, but you get a sense that, it has really become a global phenomenon. And that's what prompted BBC then to move it to BBC One. And what they've done this weekend is they've actually bumped Poldark from the 9 o'clock slot to the 8 o'clock slot. So that should tell
you. Okay, so that's a big symbol there. Yeah. By the way, Peaky Blinders, we should explain to people various theories on why they were called the Peaky Blinders.
Well, what the programme makers are kind of hinting is the kind of more romanticised view that it's to do with the hat, the peaked hat, that they used to hide razor blades in the peak of the cap. And then when they were trying to mug somebody or attack somebody, they would either headbutt them with the razor blade filled peak of the cap or else they'd slash them with it. Yeah. But conventional wisdom will tell you that Gillette didn't release a razor blade until 1890, so they were either really hard to get or they were unlikely to have them.
Right, so they didn't have a packet of disposable blades and a plastic thing to put in the hats. Any of the panel fans of Peaky Blinders?
Yeah.
Lucinda Creighton,
I'm a huge fan, I mean, since they announced the release date, I've had it in my diary and I'm going to be glued to it this evening. Yeah, it's just brilliant. I mean, everything from the soundtrack, which you referenced at the beginning, which is just absolutely brilliant. The cinematography, but the script is just, it's gripping. And, you know, with most shows, you can sort of anticipate what's going to happen. But with Peaky Blinders, it's very, very difficult. So it'll be really interesting to see how the transition to BBC One goes, whether it becomes a bit more mainstream.
The Hallmark audience are going to be clutching their pearls tonight, I think. Exactly. And if the Downton crowd come in, good God, they're going to want to hit them. Because Lucinda, I mean, it's fairly grimy. The violence can be quite graphic.
It's really violent and it's very graphic. So you have to have a stomach for that, I guess. But it's one of the best shows that I have seen in a long, long time. The acting is fantastic. Cillian Murphy's just brilliant.
He's magnetic.
He's fabulous. Yeah. And I was hoping he was going to be on the show today, actually.
Listen, we were going to have him, but we didn't have time, so we bumped him. He was actually outside, but he had to go home again. Ian, you a fan?
Yeah, massive fan, really, really, like you said, from day one. What's really interesting is, you know, not just after season two did it go mainstream, like it went commercially mainstream. I mean, some of the spin-off events, David Beckham's done a deal with them to a clothing line that's going into 160 stores around the world. You know, there's comic books, there's video games, there's beers. It's even led to trademark disputes. In the first series or two, there was a load of guys registering things like Peaky Blinders whiskey and Peaky Blinders gin. And there was even pictures of Cillian Murphy drinking it because they thought it was great crack. And about season three, then they realised, geez, we have a really good commercial opportunity. Yeah. So they've been locked in a battle in the European courts.
There were a lot of unofficial Peaky Blinders actual festivals, but now they've decided they're doing an official one.
Next month, and they're bringing it back to Birmingham. And again, it does ring a lot like an Electric Picnic style event, but as Peaky Blinders. And I think Primal Scream and The Streets are kind of the headline acts for it. And it's over 2 days and it's official, so they're going to bring in a couple of the cast members and there's going to be Q&As, and you'd imagine a lot of people roaming around dressed like the Peaky Blinders gang drinking gin and whiskey.
I think one of the other reasons it probably caught the zeitgeist as well is that it's not just about the lads. They're very strong female roles as well.
Absolutely. I mean, Helen McCrory, who plays Aunt Paul, is the ultimate matriarch in any series, and she's like, the poor woman has gone through hell and back and she still manages she seems to be the only person who can rein Tommy Shelby in, and that has been straight through the entire series. And all the women, I mean, Lizzie as well is particularly strong, and I believe she's going to feature quite prominently in the new series. And I mean, Jessie Eden, who's Charlie Murphy, she again is kind of the new love interest for Tommy. So, I mean,
yeah, I think she's more than a love interest, though, isn't she?
She's
a suffragette.
I'm trying not to give anything away because I'm terrified of spoilers.
She's a women's liber and some of the other things. You see, you just defined her in relation to Tommy there.
Okay. So, very good.
Listen,
very woke.
Before we finish up, there's a lovely story about David Bowie.
And
what a fan he is and his involvement there.
Yeah, so before he died, he actually contacted Cillian Murphy and he wrote him a little letter. And he sent a picture to him, and in response, Cillian then sent him his Peaky Blinders hat.
He sent a picture to prove who he was, which I think he used to do with a lot of people, because they'd say, you're not David Bowie. Yeah.
He sent him his Peaky Blinders hat, which he'd worn in, I think it was the first season, and he sent it to Bowie. And then Bowie, before he died, sent a copy of Lazarus to the production team.
Which was the song from the final album that he was making when he died.
Because he wanted them to have it to use as part of the soundtrack before he passed away. He was that much of a fan.
Yeah, yeah. Any other fans, Gerard Howland?
I have to admit, I haven't seen it. I'm so sheltered. But I'm obviously going to see it now. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. And music, of course, not just Bowie, music very important. Just give us a romp through the kind of music that they've championed on it.
Well, Red Right Hand is the theme tune, and it's Nick Cave. And Nick Cave, I think, has over 14 tracks that have featured over the soundtrack. You've got Tom Waits, you've got Leonard Cohen, you've got Radiohead, you have... The White Stripes, you have PJ Harvey, and what you have as well is you've got a lot of cover acts coming in, and what they do is they rework and they rewrite and they cover Red Right Hand, so the theme tune often changes up each week. And Cillian Murphy himself has a big role to play in the music. He's taken quite a, you know, he's really introduced himself into a point where he's now helping them select the music, and he, you know, because he is himself not a self-professed muso, but he used to play in a band himself.
Yeah.
A son of Mr. Green Jeans, I think, was
back in Cork. Jazz kind of thing. Yeah. Okay, so look, that's Peaky Blinders, and it starts tonight at 9 p.m. on BBC One.